Entrepreneurship is action. The ethic is action, the style is action, the product is action. Entrepreneurship is a process in which the actions of the entrepreneur are decisive. Today, we suggest 8 action steps you can take for the betterment of your business.
This is the Economics for Entrepreneurs podcast, a project of the Mises Institute, applying the principles of economics to start, grow, and manage your business. For free tools, resources, key takeaways, and actionable insights from each episode, visit Mises.org/E4EPod. Now, here's Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. In our penultimate podcast of 2019, we highlighted 4 principles of Austrian economics that can help you in the betterment of your business. They were customer sovereignty, putting your customer first, the Austrian theory of competition, which is to avoid it by becoming unique and having no competition, dynamic flexibility in resource allocation and capital, and the economics of value, especially value as a learning process. Today, it's December 31st, so this is the last podcast of 2019, or you'll probably be listening to it as the first podcast of 2020. In either case, we wanted to highlight beneath those 4 principles some action steps that you can take this year in 2020 to better your business using Austrian action methods. And so we'll lay out 8 of those today, many of them accompanied by action graphics, which we'll provide links to on our website, Mises.org/E4EPod. And we'd love to hear from you about which ones are most useful or most applicable, or those you have questions about. And you can do that at our Mises for Business page on LinkedIn, which you can find at Mises.business. So here goes. Step 1. Conduct an empathic diagnosis. The customer comes first in Austrian economics, and the entrepreneur's first job is to understand the customer, their hopes, their fears, their goals, their wants, their feelings. There's a skill for that and a method. The skill is empathy, the ability to feel what the customer feels. It's a demanding skill, since the feelings you're trying to understand are purely subjective and emotional to the individual customer. Isabella Neighbor told us to listen from the heart, and we can help you to do so with a tool called the empathic diagnosis. You're like a doctor, where the patient can describe the symptoms but not the disease. You have to deduce the disease or the dissatisfaction from the information you are given. The secret is not to ask the customer what they want or what they need, not to ask the customer to explain the cause of how they feel. They don't know. David Ogilvy, a famous British advertising wizard, said that people don't say what they think and don't do what they say. The entrepreneur can do 2 things under these circumstances. You can observe what they do with their money. That behavior reveals their preferences. And you can ask them how they feel. They can tell you that. They can't tell you why. That comes in step 2. To ask them how they feel, use the contextual interview tool. There's a link to the interview template on our website, Mises.org/E4EPod. Think of the interview as a conversation with a customer whose feelings you're able to identify by a discussion in context. The context is the experience you're trying to help them improve through your service or through your new innovation. The example we used in the template is commuting, just to take a subject that has a lot of dissatisfaction for a lot of people. You would start out the interview by saying, "I want to talk to you about how you feel about your daily commute." You'll get lots of emotional words: painful, frustrating, boring. Those are feeling words. They feel pained. They feel frustrated. They feel bored. Success. You've hit an emotional seam that you can mine. Now dig into their goals. What's their goal for their commute? Why are they doing it? We call that the end that they are pursuing. What do they do to try to achieve that end? We call those the means. Then how do they feel about their commute? You're looking for expressions of dissatisfaction. What's on their wish list for their commute in the future? What's getting in the way of their wish list? After the interview, you can collate the dissatisfactions, the emotional pain points, and the functional failures. Then you can curate these inputs into functional, cognitive, and emotional components of a potential new solution, i.e. new features, that's functional, new beliefs about what's possible, that's cognitive, and better feelings about the experience, that's emotional. You can call these three elements together the customer's need. Now you have a first building block for the design of a service or innovation that has high potential for facilitating new and higher value for the customer. Click on the link on our website to get the contextual in-depth interview outline. Action 2. Construct a means-end chain to generate insights about hidden customer motivations. The output of your empathic diagnosis provides the basis for your next step. The goal is to generate an understanding about the motivations of the customer that they can't quite explain themselves. People do not have introspective access to their motivations. Motivations are unconscious. People don't know what Rory Sutherland calls the real why that explains their actions. Smart entrepreneurs can find out this real why using our means-end chain tool. A chain is a series of links. You join the links one at a time. The first link is what we call the contact point. What's the point at which the customer comes in contact with your service, or a competitive service that you're analyzing, or an experience where your service plays a role? This is a behavioral link. They shop, they buy, they use, they attend a location, they see an ad or a video or a newsletter, they use a discount coupon. At this point, just record what is the contact point that you're observing. The next link is functional. What features and attributes of the product or service or event do they perceive? It's heavy or light, it's warm or it's cold, it's expensive or it's affordable, it tastes a certain way, it fits well, it's robustly packaged. These are features and attributes. No interpretation yet. Record them as they are perceived by the customer. The next link in the chain is the functional benefit. What's in it for them? What are the consequences of choosing these features and attributes? The benefit of good taste might be enjoyment, for example. Or the benefit of well-fitting clothes is a flattering profile. These are functional benefits. Have the customer tell you what they are. They're a link. But they're not yet the real why that explains their unconscious motivations. The next link takes us closer to the level of emotional benefit. How do the functional benefits make the customer feel? For example, good taste might make them feel indulged, or their flattering profile may make them feel socially confident. The customer may not be able to attach the right words to the emotional benefit, but they can usually get close. They'll say, for example, that being dressed fashionably makes them feel good when entering a room full of friends. They won't use the words a feeling of social acceptance or even of social prestige, but those are the words you'll put on the emotion only so long as it describes exactly what the customer is feeling. Then there's one last step, and that is the end of the chain. We call it the highest value for which customers are striving. This is the real why, the one they can't tell you about. The highest value is the long-term goal of their life, or this phase of their life. It's their hidden motivation. It could be the pursuit of a sense of achievement, or of purpose, or meaning that your service might be able to support. It might be the longing for a feeling of true, deeply bonded friendship with other people they love and respect. Or they may be seeking social acceptance or self-respect. There is one last step, and that is the end of the chain. We call it the highest value for which customers are striving. This is the real why, the one they can't tell you about. The highest value is the long-term goal of their life, or of this phase of their life. It's their hidden motivation. It could be the pursuit of a sense of achievement, or of purpose, or meaning that your service might be able to support. It might be the longing for a feeling of true, deeply bonded friendship with other people they love and respect. It might be the purpose of being a good parent to their children. Or they may be seeking social acceptance or self-respect. These are all lifelong values that customers might not be able to articulate clearly. But if your service is able to contribute to their achievement of these values, or to make their pursuit of them more likely to succeed, they'll embrace your value proposition. I'd urge you to complete this means-end chain physically. Take an easel pad or a wall, mark out the links as different levels, starting at the contact point at the bottom and advancing one by one to the highest value at the top. Use sticky notes to populate each level with the appropriate customer responses that you get from the empathic diagnosis. Then join the most pertinent items together that link each level. At this contact point, they perceive these features and attributes that generate this functional benefit and this emotional benefit, all of which are logically and causally linked to the pursuit of the highest value. Recalculate this sequence a few times until you're confident you've identified the strongest route to the highest value the customer is seeking when he or she is in your space. You now have an insight into the customer's hidden motivations, their real why, and you can use it to build a strong brand. Action step 3, therefore, is to build a strong brand with our brand uniqueness blueprint. Building a strong brand provides you with a financial machine, a capital asset that can generate customer revenues reliably over time because it meets customer needs and solves customer problems better than any alternative. The words better than any alternative mean that your brand must be unique. That's a tough standard, and we have a uniqueness template to help you. The brand uniqueness blueprint helps you identify the two parts of your brand foundation. Who is it for? I.e., whose problem are you solving? Whose needs are you meeting? The term for this is relevance. And how are you solving the problem in a superior fashion? That's differentiation. On the relevance side of the blueprint, you identify your target audience demographically, that's age and income and so on, but this is the least important element of their identity. You identify them behaviorally. What have you observed them doing or buying that might bond them to your brand? And emotionally, what are their feelings about the category in which your value proposition resides? All of this information comes from the empathic diagnosis. Now, add your core insight. What do you know that no one else knows about their motivations? This comes from your identification of the highest value, the real why, that they are pursuing, and the dissatisfaction they're feeling about their current attainment. Finally, know your competition. What do you know about what your target customers are buying now that you aim to replace? Or what do you know about their compensating behavior that they're exhibiting that you aim to change? This is your competitive frame of reference. They're doing something now, however unsatisfactory, to pursue their goal. On the differentiation side of the blueprint, there are also three components. First, the promise you're making to your customers, which is easy. You'll solve their problem, make them feel how they want to feel, and enable their pursuit of their highest value. Phrase your promise persuasively so that your marketing team can communicate it effectively. The second component is, how are you going to keep that promise? Every time, without exception. You have to be credible and trustworthy and meet the customer's expectations, which after all, you're creating by making the promise. We call this brand delivery. All the components you have to deliver to meet expectations in their every aspect. Finally, on the differentiation side of the brand foundation, there's your brand's character. Your customer is going to have a relationship with your brand. Think of it as a person. What would be the character of a person with which this customer would choose to have a close, long-lasting, trusting relationship in the belief that this friend will solve their problem and take good care of them? Use our brand uniqueness blueprint by clicking the link in the podcast notes at Mises.org/E4EPod. You'll find an instructions template, an example using a real brand, and a blank template you can use for your own brand. If you want to send us a completed blueprint for your own brand via our Mises for Business LinkedIn page, we'll be glad to give you our comments. Action item 4, complete a resource uniqueness inventory. Our first three action items have been directed at your customer understanding and embedding that understanding in your brand blueprint. Now you turn to your firm's capabilities. We want these to be unique to your purpose, just as your brand is. That's a tough-sounding word, isn't it? Unique. But Austrian economics focuses you on individualism, and that includes your own individual experience, your individual knowledge, your individual skills, and similarly, those of your team. And therefore, with you and your team, you have individual knowledge of customers and their feelings based on your empathic diagnoses. And the relationships you develop based on your insights are unique. Your location is unique. Your brand is unique. There are so many elements. An entrepreneur's fault often lies in underestimating their own unique resources. One answer to this fault is to conduct an inventory or an audit. John Chisholm, who'll be with us in January 2020 as a guest, suggests in his book, Unleash Your Inner Company, a resources audit. He uses the acronym STARS, standing for skills, technologies, assets and accomplishments, relationships and reputation, and inner strengths. He recommends you complete the audit physically. List and write down your resources under each of these headings. We'll publish a basic list on our webpage when we discuss STARS in more detail with John in January. In 2019, Dr. Stephen Phelan gave us a similar analysis of the resource-based theory of entrepreneurship. And you can reprise his analysis under another acronym, PROFIT, P-R-O-F-I-T, standing for physical resources, reputational resources, organizational resources, financial resources, intellectual and human resources, and technological resources. A link to Steve's list is on our website this week. The message is the same. Organize your understanding of your own resources. With action step 5, we move into the future, which is where the entrepreneur works. So step 5 is imagine a future value experience that your resources can deliver. Whom shall I serve with my resources? And how shall I serve them? That's the query that successful entrepreneurs get right. They make the right value proposition to the right people, defined as those who exhibit a need that the entrepreneur can fill. One way to get this right is to imagine a future experience that customers will value. Mark Packard showed us how to do this by activating customer value as a learning experience in 5 stages. Stage 1 is to generate predicted value in the customer's mind. Dr. Packard taught us the science of perception, that neurologically, customers can create a mental image or mental model of a satisfaction they anticipate experiencing in the future and can predict whether that experience will be satisfying, i.e. of value to them. The predicted value is stimulated by your value proposition and is testable. You can present a proposition and ask whether the customer predicts value from it. It's a first step. In the second step, the customer predicts relative value. Is it better than an alternative, whether direct or indirect or desired? So when you test your value proposition for predicted value, test it for relative value as well. What's the competing value that yours must exceed? And how does yours compare? The next step is defining exchange value, getting the customer to actually exchange dollars for your offering. This is a moment of truth that demands that you get pricing, distribution, merchandising, and convenience all right. Experimentation to find the balance is your friend at this step. The next stage is experience value, the act of consumption during which the customer actually experiences value. Value is a feeling on their part. As an entrepreneur, you can facilitate that feeling, but you can't manage it. So at this point, you find a way to monitor the feeling, positive or negative, intense or modulated, lasting or fleeting. The final step in the learning process, and the one that stimulates the beginning of a new cycle, is the value assessment that the customer conducts for themselves. Looking back on the cycle, was the experience value greater or less than the predicted value? Was it better or worse than the alternative, perhaps a brand that the customer abandoned in favor of yours? Does it feel that the experience was worth the dollars given in exchange? This is a place to identify a measurement of the value you have generated. But be careful, it must be a measurement of feelings and perception, which is a tricky measurement proposition. We published a graphic of the end-to-end value learning process cycle that you can access at Mises.org/E4EPod. And when imagining the new value experience you're trying to facilitate, make sure to imagine every stage in the sequence and how you can best stimulate each one. It's a valuable exercise, and we think that the value learning process will prove far more effective for you than the typical marketing funnel that is published. Build your value proposition for each of the stages and business plans and action plans accordingly. Now you're ready to tackle action item number 6, to initiate an innovation project to deliver on the imagined value experience. In Austrian economics, innovation is the indispensable fuel of entrepreneurial action. The customer is continuously changing, rebalancing their preferences, seeking improvement in their circumstances, looking to feel better about their current situation. Dynamism on the part of the entrepreneur is therefore mandatory. Kurt Carlson gave entrepreneurs the formula for managing innovation systematically. He uses the formula he calls NABC. N stands for identifying the customer need. You've done that by analyzing the predicted value they might feel for the value proposition. The step in Kurt's process requires you to refine your understanding of the need, of its intensity, and of its scale. It must be important. The A in NABC is your approach, your business model, your uniqueness, your capability of delivering, your technology, your logistics, the complete package of commercially fulfilling the need. Think it through carefully and in great detail. The B in NABC is benefits per costs in Kurt's language, or what Mark Packard identified as the relative value to the customer. What value will they assign to the predicted experience? Is that greater than the cost to them, so there is relative value? And will they actually experience something that confirms their value calculus? From the entrepreneur's perspective, you must choose the costs that deliver the value and leave you with a profit. You can't manage value, so costs are your choice. They're in your control. The C in the NABC formula represents competition and alternatives. It's imperative for entrepreneurs always to understand the alternatives the customer has available to them. These span the spectrum from doing nothing, leaving their need unmet, to favoring a direct competitor of yours or an indirect competitor. It's important to always be monitoring this competitive landscape and anticipating future competitive responses and future customer adaptations. The NABC formulation is available at Mises.org/E4EPod, where we'll keep all the notes for this episode. To close, I'm going to add 2 specific Austrian action items that can be part of your NABC innovation process. So action item 7 is conduct a time inventory and then cut it. One of the most important ways Austrian economics helps entrepreneurs is with a strategic appreciation of the role of time. Production, the process of delivering a value proposition to the customer, takes time. Resources must be assembled. Delivery systems must be implemented. People must be hired and trained. Code must be written. The entrepreneur assumes the cost of time and doesn't receive revenues until the process is completed. Meanwhile, the customer values time in their own subjective way. and may seek alternatives that offer better time value. We're just beginning to understand how valuable time is to the customer. Look at the success of just-in-time restocking systems, same-day delivery, and overnight global distribution. Steve Denning told us that time is now a strategic weapon of the entrepreneur and a strategic dimension on which competition takes place. The customer wants speed, so the entrepreneur must manufacture speed. A good step for the entrepreneur is to conduct a time audit. Examine all your processes that take time. Then imagine ways to reduce that time. Look at it from the viewpoint of the customer. Where in the service experience would they welcome time reductions or time savings? How could you deliver them? Make time part of your innovation program. Give time back to your customers. Action item number 8 is to identify the next innovation that makes it easier for your customer. Austrian Economics always looks at business from the customer's viewpoint. It sees that the overarching strategy that defines the digital era from a customer perspective is making things easier. Easier by a factor of 10x or 100x. Online purchasing is easier. Overnight delivery is easier. Cloud computing is easier. Subscription models are easier. Customers today are permanently dissatisfied with the degree of difficulty of getting things done because they've seen how much easier things can be in so many arenas, so many parts of the landscape. Entrepreneurs are competing to make things easier for them. One of the ways that entrepreneurs make things easier for customers is by adding intelligence to their systems, intelligence that serves the customer, often through the customer's self-serving. UPS adds the intelligence of tracking so that customers can do their own monitoring of a UPS delivery. Amazon adds the intelligence of search so that customers can find the product that best meets their need. Morgan Stanley adds intelligence to customer account reporting so that the customer can conduct their own portfolio analysis. Many of these pieces of intelligence are plugins. You can download the intelligence from GitHub or purchase it from software vendors and plug it into your system. So here's an exercise you can conduct. Imagine a way in which you can make things easier for your customer. Your empathic diagnosis might reveal several ways. Then imagine how your system could deliver the increase in ease by a 10 or 100x factor. Then imagine a piece of digital intelligence or AI that might be able to implement the improvement for you. Then search for it on GitHub or elsewhere. You don't have to develop the technology. You just need to imagine what it can deliver in increased ease for your customer. So let's leave it there for today. We've covered 8 action items that are suggested by Austrian Analysis for improving your business by improving your understanding of your customer and your delivery of new and better solutions for them. All 8 are practical and depend mainly on imagination. They cover empathic understanding, branding, resource assembly, value learning, innovation, costs, convenience, and time. I hope there's plenty there for you to think about as you make your business more Austrian in 2020. And be sure to let us know your thoughts, questions, and insights at Mises.business on LinkedIn. Thank you, and I look forward to a better 2020 for all of us through Austrian Economics.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.